You're listening to Extinct, a podcast about dead things. I'm Alice Leggett. Together, we'll explore the stories of species that have existed over millions of years, from the earliest forms of life to those that died out more recently, as well as modern biodiversity loss and conservation initiatives. Hello, you're listening to Extinct. In this episode, we're shining a light on the largest ever known marsupial, Diprotodon. This long-gone relative of today's wombats, koalas, and kangaroos was the size of a car, standing at 2 metres tall and weighing as much as 3 tonnes. This species is one of Australia's most well-known examples of extinct megafauna, dying out around 25,000 to 50,000 years ago. To tell us more about Diprotodon, we have University of Queensland Associate Professor Gilbert Price. He has worked extensively on extinct megafauna and ancient ecosystems, and has worked to inform approaches to modern conservation challenges. Associate Professor Price has published a range of research on Diprotodon and its relatives, as well as species found today. Gilbert, it's fabulous to have you on the show. To get us started, what got you into studying Australia's ancient animals, and what sparked your interest in the first place?
That's a good question. I think most people who become paleontologists that I'm friends with all had a long childhood type of passion. You know, they've seen Jurassic Park growing up and have been hooked on things like dinosaurs all of their lives. And for me personally, that definitely wasn't the case. I got to a third year course in my university where I was studying just general biology, ecology, and we went on to a field trip out to the Darling Downs, which is a really remarkable agricultural area and also amazing fossil deposits just west of Brisbane. And I was on a field trip there and I found some fossil teeth of an ancient kangaroo. I showed it to my lecturer and it was literally that moment that kind of really changed my mindset and interest and focus onto things like the Australia's recently extinct megafauna, as we often call them themselves. So it's just that one single little moment there that I had all those years ago that really changed things for me.
That's very cool to find something like that in your undergrad, to find those teeth. That's something that I think a lot of people would be stoked to find at any point in their career, let alone early on.
Yeah, definitely. And this actual field trip itself, I hated most of it. And there was all these other students on the trip and they were finding bones of all these amazing sort of creatures of the Ice Age. And I couldn't find anything. And it was about 3 or 4 days long. And it was literally like in the last 20 minutes, just out of frustration, I was holding a screwdriver in my hand, which I later found out is like a secret digging tool of a paleontologist. But I just kind of thrust it into the side of the creek bank and out, kind of wedged a big lump of dirt out. And the tooth itself was on the other side of that. And I really think that that one single moment has really set me up for where I am these days. And I think about it from a teaching type of perspective too, now that I find myself in the classroom as well. And I think what that particular lecturer had done for the class and what was basically allow the students to have their own opportunity to find something for themselves and kind of learn from that. So I think it's one thing to tell people about how exciting that, you know, the past is and fossils and dinosaurs or whatever it is, but it's another thing to be able to have the opportunity to learn for it yourself. So it's something I'm really super grateful for.
Yeah, absolutely. And everything I hear about west of Brisbane, anywhere in Queensland, really, it sounds like there's an absolutely insanely rich spread of specimens out there to find.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I often think about Queensland and probably South Australia as being the two kind of capitals for paleontology in Australia in terms of the vertebrates. We've both got some remarkable fossil sites going back to the time of the dinosaurs. We've got fossil sites that date across the Ice Ages with the area that I'm particularly interested in. And we're also the only two states in Australia itself that has fossil deposits that are part of the UNESCO World Heritage areas. So yeah, held in the same regard as places like the Great Barrier Reef or Stonehenge or the pyramids in Egypt. So they're really, you know, hugely significant. So that's places like Riversleigh in northwestern Queensland and Narracourt, which is in the southeastern corner of South Australia.
There's just so much out there in Australia and so many amazing discoveries that are constantly being unearthed. But speaking of the wonderful species that we've had in Australia, our focus for today is Diprotodon. And for those who have never heard of Diprotodon before, what did it look like and what makes this species special?
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you chose Diprotodon for this thing because Diprotodon is kind of like my spirit animal. So I was very lucky to be introduced to this on that field trip all those years ago. And when I did my honours at university, the project that was given to me from my supervisor at the time was to look at the taxonomy of what Diprotodon is all about and how it behaves and interacts in its environment. So I guess in a nutshell, Diprotodon is the world's largest ever marsupial that existed. So I think most people know of things like wombats and koalas and kangaroos and bandicoots and bilbies as being marsupials. But Diprotodon was very unique in that it was much, much larger than anything that we have around today. So it stood around about getting close to 2 meters or so at the shoulder. It was a four-legged animal, around about the same sort of size as a rhinoceros, if you want to think about it like that. They got up to about 3 to 4 meters in length and weighed around about 3,000 kilograms or so. So they filled the role of what we might consider to be the big game megafauna herbivore of the ice ages that we had in Australia. So when I talk about ice ages too, I just use that term quite loosely, but we're basically just talking about a time from a couple of million years ago to say about 30 or 40,000 years ago when the Diprotodon seems to drop out of the fossil record itself.
You mentioned before that you've done work quite extensively on Diprotodon. What has your research and field work on this species and other extinct megafauna been like, and what sort of determinations have you been able to make from your work?
It's been really exciting and really multifaceted at the same time as well. And, you know, some of my first investigations were just answering a really basic question, but a really fundamental question about how many species there actually were. And so I had the opportunity to travel all around Australia, visiting various museums where Diprotodon fossils were held, as well as places like the Natural History Museum in London as well, that also contains some of the original fossils that came from Australia. And, you know, just asking a basic question, how many species? I came up with the interpretation that instead of the 7 or 8 species that had been described, there's probably only one single species that existed that we know of, at least across these ice ages. And we refer to that species as Diprotodon optatum, and it was sexually dimorphic. So the males were substantially larger than what the females were. So straight away you think, okay, well, that's kind of a boring type of question, but firstly, it helps us constrain the rates of extinctions in past itself for Diprotodon. So we know how many species we have. We know we can calculate the extinction rate. And having an interpretation of things like sexual dimorphism as well, it means that we can start to piece together some of the paleobiology and the ecology of the animal as well. So we can draw analogs to modern things that are sexually dimorphic and think about what that might mean in terms of the behavior, how they interact in the environments, and a whole bunch of different things like that. So that's sort of where it started. One of my most recent papers, we were looking at the geochemistry of a Diprotodon tooth specimen. And what we found there is that Diprotodon itself was what we call a seasonal migrant. So it was a migrating species, very similar to like what you think about in Attenborough documentary for the Serengeti, where you see the zebra and the wildebeest sort of migrating around the Serengeti on a seasonal type of basis. We found evidence from the chemistry or the geochemistry of a Diprotodon tooth that it was also migrating in that kind of way. And again, this is a first for all marsupials living extinct. There's no other marsupial that undertakes seasonal migration these days. So it's something that's really interesting to us. And it also tells us something about the landscapes and the ecosystems of ancient Australia, where for there to be like a migrating big mammal type of ecosystem that exists some point in the past, it doesn't exist at all anymore, of course. So the ecology in the past has been very, very different to what it is these days.
What sort of fossil evidence has been found for Diprotodon, and what's the history of the initial finding of fossils for Diprotodon? Because I know that they were found quite a while ago initially.
So the very first fossils were found in around about 1830 or thereabouts, and they were sent over to a guy called Richard Owen, who was a very famous British anatomist in London. So they're found by Thomas Mitchell at Wellington Cave, sent over there, and Owen eventually described and named Diprotodon on the basis of the bottom part of the lower jaw with a part of a tooth in there. And so he came up with the name Diprotodon, which is, if you break it down, literally means two front teeth. So di is two, proto is like the first of a kind, like a prototype, and don is like tooth as in like orthodontist. So it's named on the basis of its two front teeth. And back in those days as well, Australia didn't have its own universities or museums. So a lot of the fossils that had been coming out of the ground back in those days were sent to places like the Natural History Museum for accession to the collections over there. Since we had our own museums, the fossils stopped to going off overseas, but we still have a lot to learn about Diprotodon. We know that it was the most wide-ranging species of marsupial within the ice ages itself. So we've got fossil records anywhere from where I am here and not too far from Brisbane, all the way up to places like Cairns, King Island in Bass Strait down near Tassie, all the way across to the western coast of Western Australia and through the central kind of core too. So places like around the Cairns Basin itself. So really, really wide ranging, and the fossils just really important in helping us understand those really ancient biogeographic patterns for these group of organisms.
With the fossil evidence specifically, what types of fossils have been able to be found from this animal?
The most common type of fossil that you'll find are probably things like teeth. And teeth, they preserve well in the fossil record because they're really quite hard. They're much harder than a regular bone or anything like that. And the beauty of teeth as well is that they're taxonomically useful. So it just means that we can use them to identify what the species are. And they also tell us things about evolutionary relationships between Diprotodon and other different marsupials. So we've got teeth in deposits all around the place. It's a lot rarer to actually have a complete skeleton of a Diprotodon. In fact, I was just thinking about it earlier. I don't think there's any single individual 100% complete Diprotodon skeleton anywhere across Australia itself. There's some sites that do tend to produce what we call articulated specimens. So that's basically when you've got the knee bone connected to the thigh bone, connected to the hip bone kind of thing. So places like Lake Calabona have produced some really nice specimens. And Lake Calabona is one of those salt pan type of lakes in South Australia. I was very fortunate to work on a fossil site across the last few years up in North Queensland as well, just south of the Gulf of Carpentaria. And we've got a Diprotodon up there. It's partly articulated, so the bones are certainly still in the correct kind of order, but it was spread out over a distance of about 6 or 7 meters itself, so sort of moving around, but it's all part of the same individual. And one of the really cool things that we found there as well was some teeth from an animal called Megalania or Varanus priscus, which is a giant goanna that used to prey on Diprotodons and things like that. So whether or not this giant goanna was responsible for the death of the Diprotodon in that case, we don't know, but certainly it was on the scene and probably at least scavenging the carcass before the skeleton itself became buried under dirt.
Speaking of Megalania, which I think is another really fascinating example of ancient megafauna in Australia, what do you think life would have been like for Diprotodon?
Very interesting. It just really blows my mind thinking about how different the environments were like back in those days. Diprotodon itself, we think, was a herding animal, so it probably did migrate around on a seasonal basis. We're still kind of scratching the surface and thinking about what other organisms were also migratory, but it was probably a case that lots of other things were sort of following Diprotodon around in its ancient environments. It was big and the biggest animal that existed on land, at least. And being big, it means that you can kind of tend to have a natural protection from things like predators. So you've got the giant goannas to deal with, but the bigger you are, the less likely you are to be attacked. But it wasn't just things like Megalania, the giant goanna, but there was also land-based crocodiles, believe it or not, that used to exist. There were giant inland freshwater crocodiles as well that Diprotodons would have had to deal with. There were giant snakes that got up to the size of an anaconda. It completely extinct in Australia today, of course. And then we had some other really big marsupial carnivores as well, including a group called the Thylacoleonids, which is a bit of a mouthful, but they're basically the marsupial lions of Australia. And you think about it too, like these animals that I'm mentioning at the moment, they're all world record breakers too. Diprotodon, the biggest marsupial that ever existed. The marsupial lion, Thylacoleo carnifex, was the biggest marsupial carnivore that ever existed. So that was getting up to the size of like a female African lion, so much bigger than a Tassie devil or Tasmanian tiger these days. The lizard itself, Megalania, was the largest land lizard that ever existed as well. And it's also probably the largest venomous creature that ever existed as well. So there's a whole bunch of Guinness World Records that we would have had in Ice Age Australia for Diprotodon and some of the other organisms that were around at the time.
Really seems like life in ancient Australia, there was a lot of very large things to contend with, but we'll talk more about that in a bit. But you were talking before about how one of the really special or I suppose unique things about Diprotodon was its range, its migration. What was its distribution across Australia like? And also being such a large herbivore, what sort of role does this play into in the ecosystem?
It was found just about everywhere. We have very patchy fossil records. Say if you drew a line from Perth to Brisbane, we have patchy records north of that line. And that's simply a consequence that there's been little exploration in that area. And most of our understanding about the fossil record and the distribution of animals in the past, whether it's Diprotodon or other things, can almost be pretty well mapped to modern densities of humans today. So we have a much better understanding, for example, where people live. So along the eastern coast, the southeastern margin, and then the southwestern margin of the continent itself. So even though we can see that Diprotodon was really wide ranging, our understanding of it is still a little bit biased itself. In terms of its impact in its environments, firstly, it was a mega herbivore. And what we know about mega herbivores in other parts of the world today, like going back to the Serengeti as a wonderful analog there, animals aren't closely related to each other, except the fact that they're also mammals. So they're placental mammals over there and diprotodont co-with marsupials, but they would have shared similar types of ecologies. And things like elephants are often considered to be things like ecosystem engineers. So they have the ability to go into a landscape, chew up all the vegetation, knock trees down, create grassland type of habitats. And those grasslands then are then beneficial for the next group of animals that might come along. So they might be the smaller antelopes and that sort of thing. So we're still piecing that story together for diprotodont, but it's very likely that diprotodont had a similar kind of role in its environment itself. So a keystone ecological engineering type of marsupial, it would have had big impact on its ecosystems, on the vegetation types, and that may have given opportunities to other species to come along later on, like some of the smaller bodied herbivores as well. So it's a very complex kind of dynamic of an ecosystem that we would have had in Australia, which just don't have anymore, unfortunately.
Looking at diprotodont's lineage, what sort of modern species are descended to or related to this animal?
That's a good question. A lot of people consider diprotodont to be just a giant wombat. Nothing could be further from the truth there. So we do have wombats still today. There's three different species of wombats. Those species also existed back in the time with diprotodont as well, but they're not particularly closely related to each other in any kind of way. So diprotodont and its family, another big term here, but a group called the diprotodontoidea, separated on an evolutionary timescale at least 25 to 30 million years ago, if not longer than that. So wombats went off one side of that marsupial family tree, diprotodont and its colleagues went off on the other side right there. So they're separated from each other by literally tens of millions of years. The wombats did one thing, diprotodont and colleagues did another thing. They had very different types of ecologies. Some of the very earliest ancestors of diprotodont were tree climbing, believe it or not. So they weren't as big as what diprotodont got to eventually, but they had very different types of ecologies. They eventually kind of came down onto the ground and diversified, got bigger and bigger and bigger. And diprotodont itself was the very last of its lineage itself. So once we lost diprotodont, it wasn't just the extinction of that one species, diprotodont optatum, but it was also the extinction of the genus, family, and the superfamily of this group of marsupials that really dominated Australian environments post kind of dinosaurs, if you want to think about it like that.
Speaking of modern, I suppose, descendants or even, you know, modern just general biodiversity that we find in Australia, why are animals so much smaller today? You know, we were just talking before about these fantastic examples of very, very large animals we used to have in the ecosystem, but now things we look at today are so much smaller. What's going on with that?
That's a really good question too. It's not really a case that animals are smaller, because the animals that we have around today were also around back in the time of the diprotodonts. So things haven't really changed in body size. Things haven't gotten smaller, let's say, across the last 30 or 40,000 years or so. It's just that we've lost the really biggest members of these former kind of ice age types of communities themselves. So it was diprotodont and about three or four or five other species very closely related to diprotodont, all very large things. There were true giant wombats as well that have been lost. There was, of course, the giant lizards that were lost, giant snakes, the inland crocodiles as well that have been lost. And one of the really big questions going on in Australian science, and in fact, it's the longest running scientific debate in any aspect of Australian science, is what happened to these organisms itself. And there's two broad ideas that have been developed to explain the extinctions, and they sort of center around either the role of the first humans coming into Australia and potentially overhunting these animals to extinction, or ideas about climate change really drastically impacting the environments and the ecosystems in which they once lived. So it's a really polarized type of area. If you speak to some other researchers, they'll say, oh, we definitely know it was this or that that did it. But the reality is we just don't have enough evidence at the moment. We don't have enough fossils that are really well dated. We don't have enough information about the biology of the majority of the animals. And these are kind of really fundamental things that we need in order to be able to even start beginning to test some of these extinction ideas. So it's kind of like a long-running thing, and hopefully my dream is that we continue to get funding to be able to do this kind of research in the future and have better information about the extinct organisms themselves before we're able to develop really strong and clear insights into their fate.
A lot of questions there that hopefully we'll get an answer to someday, but with the loss of Diprotodon specifically being the largest marsupial and such a sizable herbivore, what sort of impact do you think this might have had on the ecosystems over time, losing such a almost like a grass machine, you know?
Again, this is a question that's really difficult to answer. We just don't have enough evidence to really nail an answer right there. And it comes down again to just lack of that fossil record that we really need to be able to test some of these ideas itself. But one thing we can see that's emerging out of our research in the last few years is that the proton itself was, like I was saying before, an ecosystem engineer. So really a critical member of its environment. And Diprotodon, and for the 25 million years up until its extinction, these were the dominant land herbivores that we had in Australia. So when we think about what our ecosystems look like today, the biggest native herbivores that we have are things like grey kangaroos and red kangaroos. That's not normal at all in a geological timescale sense. The biggest native predator that we have in Australia today is the dingo, and the dingo was introduced into Australia around about 3,500 to 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, something like that. And that's, again, not normal in the geological timescale sense to have a placental mammal as being the top predator in Australia. Like, you go back to the time of the diprotodons, and it was the giant lizards and the giant kangaroos. And so the ecosystems have massively changed. And, you know, this is one of the things too that kind of strikes me a little bit. When a lot of times we talk to modern biologists and modern ecologists, they kind of consider the Australian ecosystems to have been intact up until the time of European colonization, at least. And what we're seeing on the basis of the fossil record is that that is not true in any kind of way. Like, there had been some massive changes across the last 30 or 40,000 years or so that have led to an environment that has very little analog to anything in Australia, at least for the 30 or 40 million years up until that particular point itself. But it's still a story that's written in the rocks, it's written in the fossils, but it's a story that we're still trying to piece together and understand.
Speaking of modern ecologists, what do you think studying extinct animals and ecosystems can tell us about modern landscapes we have in Australia and protecting biodiversity at the moment?
One thing I want people to understand is that things like diprotodons and all these other animals I've been talking about today, they're not dinosaurs. So when we talk about the dinosaurs, or the non-bird dinosaurs anyway, so we're talking about a group of animals that went extinct something like 66 million years ago at least. The time of diprotodon belongs to a geological chunk of time that we call the Quaternary itself, and we're actually still in the Quaternary today. So we're still in that period where we had mass extinctions of things like diprotodon and a bunch of other different organisms itself. So it kind of makes like total sense to study and understand previous, very, very geologically recent extinctions in the same time frame that we're in at the moment. And we talk about a lot of the times about what effects will climate change have in the future, what effects will rising sea levels have on ecosystems, changes in CO2, temperature, all that sort of stuff. And the reality is that these things have actually happened in the past. They've happened during the time of diprotodon and all of these other organisms. It's just that today and maybe going into the future, the drivers of those changes have a more strong anthropogenic factor towards them during burning of things like fossil fuels. But we've got this amazing resource that's buried in the rocks, these fossils, that we can learn from them and ask questions about what life could be like, for example, if temperatures were 2, 3, 4 degrees warmer than what they are today, or carbon dioxide levels were XYZ higher or lower, or whatever it is. So there's a really great value in understanding that past in order to be able to maybe use the information and figure out those lessons for things like conservation of modern biodiversity going into the future.
Of course, I think that there's a lot to learn from the past that can inform our future. But Gilbert, it's been fabulous having you on the show. It's been awesome to hear your insights, particularly about what I think is a really special and actually my favourite example of Australian extinct megafauna. So yeah, it's just been really wonderful being able to tap into your knowledge base here for this one.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you very much for having me.
You've been listening to Extinct. I'm Alice Leggett. If you want to hear more about dead things, be sure to subscribe to the podcast. And don't forget to leave a rating or review. It helps Extinct reach more people who are passionate about the planet's past and future. Until next time, stay curious.